Blog Talk Radio.
It's our number one show. Back that game with that hard rubber ball. Yes, sure, it's back. And really, when one wonders about what one shall do for a different show, it's not hard when to put it bluntly, you like lacrosse. This is our first NIL show, and joining me shortly will be Aaron William Freeland. He is the dictionary, he is my sounding board and answerer to the questions all to do with the National League Lacrosse, National Lacrosse League. And I don't know, I'm so confused right now because it's the first show. I haven't seen any games yet. The reason I haven't seen any games yet is because I've been so busy. But guess what? The season's about to begin, and you're going to get a chance to see as many games as you like, live or on the Internet.
Rock versus Calgary, Friday, January 3rd. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com.
Now, the same is true if you want to watch any other team live, and all you have to do is go to NLL.com and you'll get the opportunity to watch, some pretty interesting lacrosse. Okay. All fun aside, I should call Aaron because I know Aaron is taking on a little more responsibility now because we're actually going full bore on the lacrosse. Aaron should be at this time on the phone speaking to our guest. And since he's doing all the work, I'm going to let him tell you who our guest is. And, hey, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. I'm not supposed to be able to hear the... Boy, the production around here is just really pathetic, you know? It's just terrible. Aaron, is that
yes,
you?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
how, what's up, Frank?
Oh, I just... You know, I had a bit of a tough day, and I really appreciate your last minute help. Life has its things, and today I visited mausoleums, talked to lawyers, passport office, all this kind of wonderful stuff. And I got to tell you, it's interesting. I never had to bury a parent before, so it's tough. It's just odd. It really is odd. It's just not the regular. Way to go. But anyway, thank you for helping me out, and I want you to know I really appreciate it. Everything's fine. It's just, you know, we're a little haggard around the Sinishi clan. But regardless, a great season is about to begin.
Yes, sir, it is.
And I guess what I'd like to do to start, let's go on the presumption that I'm a complete idiot. And,
okay.
We probably don't have to assume too much there. Let's assume I know very little about the game of lacrosse. Now,
okay.
To begin with, let's talk about the positions that that players play. A goalie is kind of easy because that transcends every sport. Other than the way they look, you know, the human Michelin tire, if you will.
The mattress man, as they're affectionately.
The mattress man, that's even better. Yeah.
Sorry. Well, let's start with the goalie and work our way out.
Perfect.
In hockey, you're going to find that there are forwards and defensemen, two very defined roles on the ice at the same time. In lacrosse, it's different. You have what are called front door players and back door players. The front door players are your attackers. Whenever the ball comes down the floor and crosses over center, you throw five attackers on the floor, no defensemen. Whenever the ball comes back into your zone, you're going to throw five defensemen or what are called transition players out there. What the transition players do is it's their job once the defense gets them the ball to transition to offense. So these are the guys that go both ways that do pretty much everything. So you're going to find when you're watching the game, there's going to be a lot of flow on and off the floor. Every time the ball advances or comes back down the floor, you're going to see wholesale changes of five guys going on, five guys coming off. It can be a little confusing at first. But this is a style of lacrosse that was actually pioneered by Toronto Rock coach Les Bartley back when they were the Ontario Raiders in 1998-99 before they moved to Maple Leaf Gardens. But it's something that is relatively recognizable and easy to pick up on if you watch the game for a few minutes.
Okay.
You're going to watch wholesale changes on and off. It's pretty cool.
Now, the transition part is a position that of a name that we don't normally use. So the transition players, you said they do most of the work?
Well, the way it
acts... Are on the floor more often?
No, they're on the floor for about the same amount of time as the defensive players. For instance, on the Toronto Rocks active roster, they currently have 20 players. Of those 20 players, six are what are called forwards. That's Casey Behrens, Garrett Billings, Colin Doyle, Rob Hellier, Stefan LeBlanc, and Josh Sanderson. On defense, you've got 12 guys. You have guys like Kyle Belton, Sandy Chapman, Craig England, Jesse Gamble, Damon Edwards, Bill Greer, et cetera, et cetera. You go down the line. The players in there that are transition players, that are players that go both ways, you're looking at Sandy Chapman, Jesse Gamble, Bill Greer, Rob Marshall has been known to load the ball up the floor, and Patrick Merrill. These are the guys that are going to be getting the ball from the defense to the forwards coming out the front door. So there's not really a lot of difference usually in the amount of floor time that transitions and defenders get. It's actually pretty evenly split between those two.
Oh, okay. So let's see. Okay, so I'm just trying to think of what would be the next appropriate question. So the equipment that the players wear. So we know that the guys wear basically shorts. They don't wear knee pads and that kind of stuff. Shoulder pads and elbow pads and gloves, obviously. The glorified, we must protect at all costs, the jock strap.
I was going to say, don't forget the cup. there is one additional piece of equipment that lacrosse players wear that most players don't. Yes, there's the shoulder pads, there's the bicep and slash guard pads for your forearms, but there's also what are called rib and kidney pads. These are hard plastic pads that wrap around the player's waist. They protect from about the second or third rib up all the way down to the waist. They protect in front and they protect in back. Now, this is very important because in lacrosse there's a lot of cross-checking going on. Cross-checking is, for the most part, legal. There are sections in the rules that deal with where it's illegal to cross-check a person, but for the most part, if you're jockeying for position in front of the net, you're using the shaft of the stick in between your gloves to A, keep tabs on, and B, maneuver or throw off balance somebody.
Okay.
So cross-checking is a big part of the game, and those pads will save your life.
And that's the equipment for the players. Then you've got a net that isn't of the same kind of configuration as a hockey net or a soccer net. It is narrower but higher, right?
Actually, it's 4 feet tall by 4 feet 9 inches across. It's the same height as a hockey net. It's just narrower.
Oh, okay. So it is the same height. Just it looks like it's it may be, it doesn't matter anyway.
Sometimes it feels a lot taller than 4 feet, yeah. Frank.
Yeah, and it's deeper than a hockey net and getting deeper as the hockey nets start to, the profile of the net now is being shrunk, it's a little deeper. Now, the most important Well, the most two important, pieces of equipment in the game are the ball, which when I was a kid we called it an Indian rubber ball. Is that something that defines it at all in any way?
It is still an Indian rubber ball. It weighs approximately 1 kilogram, and it's about 3.5 inches across.
Okay.
It's still the same ball you may remember.
Yes. And I remember feeling it. I remember feeling it. It didn't feel good. We've got the situation where the stick that they use, the lacrosse stick. There are ones now. There are different kinds of sticks. You have your wooden ones. You have your plastic ones. What would be deemed an approved stick in the National Lacrosse League?
Currently, the approved sticks are ones that are made by, if I recall correctly, it was Reebok. They had taken over sponsorship for everything. But currently, the approved stick is one that has an aluminum composite or titanium shaft and a plastic pre-approved league head. There are several different variations.
We have an understanding for those of us that watch hockey, the composite sticks tend to break. How do the lacrosse sticks survive the vicious and a hockey stick for the most part, the blade is what takes all the heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lacrosse stick, and that's not to suggest there's no cross-checking going on in the National Hockey League, but as we know, for the most part, it's illegal. But in lacrosse, it is not illegal.
That's correct. Just give me a second here. I'm tracking down a stick. I'm looking for one of my favorites.
Okay, you know what? Let's take a break and give you a chance to do that. And
let us
delve a little bit into the history of the NLL.
The sure. National Lacrosse League, NLL, is North America's professional indoor lacrosse league, featuring the best players in the world competing for the sport's most coveted prize, the Champions Cup. Founded in 1986, the NLL ranks third in average attendance for professional indoor sports worldwide, behind only the National Hockey League and the NBA. The 2014 NLL regular season, which marks the league's 28th year, opens on Saturday, December 28th. The league is comprised of 9 franchises across the U.S. and Canada. We have the Buffalo Bandits, the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, the Minnesota Swarm, the Philadelphia Wings, the Rochester Nighthawks, the Toronto Rock, and of course, the Vancouver.
Okay, so that covers a little bit of history of the game and the teams that make up the league. Did you find your stick?
I did find my stick.
Where was it?
It was actually hanging up with goalie sticks in the bedroom.
Now, when Aaron says he was looking for his stick, he wasn't looking for it on the internet. He was in his closet. And he got buried by a bunch of stuff. You look like a cartoon character. You shouldn't have pulled what was it that you pulled out? The helmet and everything came down on you?
No, I went reaching for the fat boy in the back of the closet.
The fat boy? What's he doing there?
It was a mirror. Shut up.
There you go. All right. So, tell us about the stick that you like the most.
Well, the stick that I usually play with when I'm playing out and running, which is not often if I can help it, is a titanium shafted, what's called a Warrior Fat Boy. They don't make these anymore, so it's an oldie but a goodie. The actual shaft design for these sticks is designed to withstand a lot of punishment. It's actually octagonal, so that means that it can take a lot more weight and take a lot more stress and tension before it snaps, and I've seen them snap before. The stick that I normally play with is what I like to call a pool skimmer. It's a plastic stick with a smaller head than the traditional Indian wooden shaft sticks.
That one, again, is the shaft design is octagonal, again, to take the wear and strain of somebody like me leaning on it when I'm in goal, and to give it a little strength in case somebody decides they want to misbehave in front of my net. But the way that these sticks are designed, they're designed to take a lot of pressure and a lot of weight so that you can do what you need to do with those sticks.
All right. So we've covered the equipment. We've covered the positional play of the players. We've covered the nets. We've covered the, what'd you call them, the mattress boys, the mattress police?
The mattress men.
The mattress men, the goalies. And we covered the fact that there is a dissimilarity between lacrosse and hockey with the transition position. You do have goalies, you do have defensemen, and you do have forwards. The transition players are a different, as you said, this goes back to Les Bartley, who coached the Toronto Rock, and goes back further. Now the officiating. Now, it's for anyone that's gone to see the Rock, you kind of get, it's like, or go see any other NLL team. Sorry, I was just going by who I've gone to see. You almost get barreled over by the lack of penalties. If you haven't seen lacrosse, you wonder how they could go on, you know, the obvious penalties. It looks like they're trying to hurt each other, and one is usually accustomed to believing that in sports, if they're trying to hurt each other and accomplishing it, usually there's a penalty. The equipment's good enough to withstand this. How much torture must that be on a player?
In all honesty, most players are – you play contact in lacrosse as soon as you start playing the game. So from paperclip to paperweight to peanut all the way up to the higher levels of the game, it's full contact right from the get-go. You learn where to take the hits. You learn how to make the proper hits, proper cross-checking, et cetera. It's a bit of physical punishment, but because the pads are harder plastic – It's a lot easier to deal with. One of the reasons actually that I decided I wanted to play goal is the fact that I'm not really that much of a fan of getting beat on, so I like to have a 9'3" circle of safety around me.
Well, just so people understand it, I'm not a babe in the woods when it comes to lacrosse. I had the good fortune for over a decade at least, of covering the Toronto Beaches lacrosse team. And doing the play-by-play for them, and it was indoor lacrosse, and it was at Scarborough Arena, the arena that rained after the next day, if it rained. It got caught in the roof, and then it would leak for like a day later. It was fun, and you know, you're playing in a hockey rink, of which many of them back in the day, if I can use that term, it didn't have air conditioning in them because, quite frankly, they liked the cold hockey arenas, right? So you didn't need air conditioning. But now with the advent of other sports and them being, you know, used for more than just hockey, there's air conditioning now. But back in the day, it was interesting to watch those guys play in upwards of 90-degree temperatures back when Fahrenheit was the gauge, around 30 centigrade. The guys are very healthy, aren't they? They have to be physically, with the pace of the game in the LLL, they have to be pretty physically prepared for a challenge, physically, I mean.
You know, it is true. You have to bring your game and be ready to play every single game. You can't loaf in lacrosse. It becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly.
They're moving rather quickly. Unlike hockey where, you know, players are – they both – the NLL has their fights. The difference being that in the NLL, your feet are well planted. So, you know, getting a punch can hurt a lot more in lacrosse than it does in hockey, because in hockey, of course, you don't have the steadying influence of having your feet planted. Fighting, define for me and tell us about fighting in lacrosse and how it's acceptable, how it isn't. What are some of the rules to recognize as far as fighting is concerned?
Well, there are fights. Yes, it is easier to plant and throw when you play the game. But much as in hockey and in other organized sports where fighting has become part of the game, there are rules that govern when you fight, how you fight, and whatnot. In the National Lacrosse League and in the summer leagues, players will take off their helmets before the fight because they wear a full face cage. If you're going to pummel somebody, you don't want that extra layer in there to possibly muck up your hand, because it's pretty easy to cut yourself on a face cage. So gloves off, helmets off, and square up, and away you go. Now, the NLL does have rules about tie-downs. All jerseys do have to be tied down in some fashion or fastened equipment, so it's not easy to pull it over your head. There is a penalty for that. I don't think I've ever seen it called. But, you know, if somebody takes liberties with your star player, or if you feel somebody's abusing you too much in front of the net, then it's definitely your option. The usual intent, though, is not to have a designated fighter go out and start something to get everybody riled up. That's, in general, that's not usually done. The whole idea behind the fighting is it usually comes out of the flow of the game. And being as,
in reality, as physical and intense as it is,
it happens.
But in reality, right, Aaron, because in hockey it's staged. I'm not saying the fights are phony, but they are staged. In fact, it isn't a matter of the game. It's a matter of getting squeaking that fight in so you can make Don Cherry happy. It's becoming rarer by the moment. Now, when you take away the staged fights, take away the fights where a guy is trying to intimidate somebody or goad somebody into a fight just because they feel it's their advantage, and then finally the fights that happen because somebody handed out a clean check. When you subtract those three scenarios, there really aren't that many fights in hockey. In lacrosse, on average, how many fights would you see in a game?
In a really, really rough game, maybe three. Your typical game, maybe one. I mean, if somebody's taking pot shots at me and slashing me as opposed to cross-checking me, I might take exception to that. But, I mean, in general, it only seems like it just because the punches thrown are bigger. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes. It's, yeah, no. I understand that. The dynamic of fighting on your feet planted is a lot different than on sliding skates.
Yeah.
You know, in hockey, it's a lot easier to lose your balance than it is on concrete or on turf, if you will, because that's what they use. Okay, and let's talk about the turf. So is the turf a lot like what we expect or see, in football, or is it different? And how is it different?
It depends on the surface. There's a couple different manufacturers. One of the major ones that's used by the NLL is a company called Dieter Turf. I've played on a couple different surfaces. For the most part, it's a really spongy, padded surface, but the way that it's laid out in sections. If you do go to a lacrosse game, you'll look down at the floor and you'll notice there's sections that are cut out for logos and what have you, and it is possible that you might get bitten by what's called the turf monster. That's where buckles and whatnot in how the turf is laid out cause little things that can trip you up. You're also going to see rug burn in some cases where you happen to slip and fall and slide, and that's gonna pop up. But for the most part, it is. I've never actually been on an indoor football surface, so I really couldn't tell you. But it is. It's actually a relatively forgiving and comfortable to walk on surface.
Now, is Jarrett going to make time to be on? Have you talked to him?
I did speak to him. He was actually with a friend whose father passed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so he was going to try to make it back before 11 o'clock tonight.
Okay,
I know, and
I look forward to having him on as well. And Bruce is ready at 9:30.
Well, he's ready pretty much any time, whenever you want to give him a call.
Okay. Well, I just thought we'd set up, you know, and then we'll get to him.
Sure.
Let's talk about the game. And so for those, because I'd really like to give people an opportunity to, you know, understand the game better and maybe even watch it. And when they do, you know, watch it, with a little more understanding. And also, I would like to invite you, if you are listening or if you do want to listen, you can call us at 714-242-5250 to ask us a question about lacrosse, make a contribution, if you will, or you can Facebook me with your number and I can call you from our LA number. Yeah, you'll be calling an LA number to talk to us on the program. So, you know, the game is fast, furious, yeah, tough, and exciting. Last year, well, let's talk about the NLL first. So 28 years the NLL has been around, and yeah. What was it before it was the NLL? Give us an idea of how that league came into fruition.
Well, when it first came about, it was originally called the Eagle Pro Boss Lacrosse League, and it was originally started as a way to sell more equipment. The rules were very, very similar to Field, because that's what they were trying to import, and they only had three or four teams. One of the originals is the Philadelphia Wings. Detroit had a team called the Turbos for a bit. There was the Charlotte Cobras, the Columbus Land Sharks, the Syracuse Smash, the Washington Wave, the Washington Power, the Pittsburgh Crossfire, the Baltimore Thunder. There's a whole bunch. It moved in and out. Teams showed up and disappeared, depending on, you know, how the owners were feeling, if they felt that there was a market. In the mid-90s, however, a couple of players emerged by the names of Paul and Gary Gate. These guys were phenomenal. 6'2", 240 pounds, built like linebackers. They completely revolutionized the indoor game. They broadened the appeal because they played field lacrosse and were extremely popular, and they brought fans to the indoor game as well. Over the course of the years, in the early to mid-2000s, the league tried to expand. There were franchises in Ottawa, Montreal. There was the Vancouver Ravens. But as you know, as the years go on, there was even a team in Portland called the Lumberjacks. They had this really awesome plaid jersey. I kind of wish that I'd managed to get my hands on one. Batinovich is listening. I'm sorry I called him the tax write-off. I was completely wrong. The jerseys were just amazing. But, I mean, as it currently stands, the league has settled on a relatively stable platform of 19. I wish the divisions were even, but that's the way it goes. And we are where we are today.
Perfect. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Bruce Barks Barker. The 2014 National Lacrosse League regular season begins on Saturday, December 28th, when the back-to-back champion Rochester Nighthawks hosts the Minnesota Swarm at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bandits also take on the visiting Philadelphia Wings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, while West Division play gets underway with the Edmonton Rush at the Colorado Mammoth at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Watch all three season-opening games live on YouTube via the Lacrosse Network. And if watching the game isn't good enough for you, you can always go to the game live and in person and watch your NLL team. All you have to do is hook up to NLL.com and you'll be able to pick up tickets for your favorite team. Hope to see you at the rink. All right. So we get to have a guy that I had on, I used to do a sports show on Rogers many, 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 many years ago. Now, fortunately, Bruce hasn't gotten older, but I have become decrepit in my old age. But Bruce has a long history in a short lifespan. He was a news and sports director at MyFM 95. He is actually right now 95.5 Kincardine, 90.9 Port Elgin, and 99.7 Goderich. Now, for those of you that know Bruce Barker, you'll know that he loves snow, and he loves traveling in snow. In fact, when he goes to a game, he wants to know there's snow between him and the ACC. He also, in the past, was a morning show host, and he was a sports director at Barks Bites Radio Productions. He is, of course, the announcer of the Toronto Rock Lacrosse. He's had a lot of experience. He basically, he's been a jack of all trades. When I met him, he is one of the most liked media guys. When we used to go to the J games with the media and some other places, Bruce was the kind of guy that everybody loved to talk to, and everybody had a question for Bruce because they needed to know for their show, whether it be TV, other radio guys. Bruce is a pretty on-the-ball kind of guy when it comes, you know, to basically understanding sports. He goes back to 1982, and his motto is, have a good time all the time. And rumor is that he stole that from Spinal Tap, by the way. I guess he has an affinity, maybe, you know, because he has the mouth to match Kiss's tongue, I think. I think that's you know, why he is such a Kiss fan as well. We might even talk to him about how many different concerts he's gone with Kiss as the headliner, as they would be any time. So, without further ado, Bruce Barks Barker. Bruce, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
long time we haven't spent time together, and I'm really, when I found out that you were doing the announcing for that, I tried to get up there, and we just couldn't make it work. You know, it's you are trying to do a job, and I understand that. But I really did, you know, I was disappointed I couldn't catch you and catch up on old things. So since 1982, you know, that's quite the road for a 29-year-old.
Oh, heck, I tell you, closing in on 30 years in broadcasting in 2014.
There you go. Bruce, you now announce the Toronto lacrosse, the Toronto Rock lacrosse team. And you've been doing that for a while. Tell us, first of all, why and how you ended up becoming the announcer.
Well, it goes back to 2000 when it was, of course, the proposed move from Maple Leaf Gardens to the Air Canada Centre was happening. So Toronto Maple Leafs had a training camp up in Barrie. So all, like myself and about nine other guys, because the legendary Paul Morris was not going from the Gardens to the ACC, so they had an audition for the PA voice, which went to my good friend Andy Frost. But on the way down, because we got to call, each guy got to do a period of a inter-squad game. I was about five steps out of the press box at the Barrie Molson Center, and Bill Waters, at that time one of the ownership group of the Toronto Rock, grabbed me by the arm and said, if you don't get the Leaf job, we want you to do the Rock games. And, of course, I played lacrosse in high school and was always a fan. And next thing you know, there's a press conference at the old Hot Stove Club in the Gardens for the 2000 season and the last season of pro sports at the Gardens. And so I was with the Rock from then until 2003, and then I moved out to Calgary. I was with the Roughnecks for a couple of years, and then went up to the Camrose area near Edmonton, so I was with the Rush for a couple of years. But ironically, for two of those years, 2006 and 2007, Brad Waters flew me in from Alberta to the ACC. So people in the room are going, don't you live in Alberta? I said, yeah, I commute on the weekends. And I'll say that was a fun 2 years, but I don't remember the summer 2007 because I think I caught up with my sleep because I was also doing junior hockey play-by-play.
Yeah, so you have lacrosse in your blood, and it's something that up until, I guess now it's about 3 or 4 years ago, Parliament decided, because up until then, technically and legitimately, lacrosse was our national sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, they gave it the designation of national winter and national summer sports.
Yeah, and is that what they did? Is that the distinction they made?
Hockey and lacrosse now split it.
Oh, okay. So they didn't replace it with hockey. They just said, okay, let's share the stage here. And since you guys are in the winter, you guys are the winter sport. Since you guys are in the summer, you're the summer sport. Pretty simple.
I'll tell you what, I just wish they had kept it as lacrosse as a national sport because, you know, it is. It's 100% Canadian.
Yeah.
A lot of places lay claim to the birthplace of hockey.
Yes. Yes. It even goes back to Holland, for goodness sake, and even England.
Yeah.
They all make a claim into starting hockey. Yes, the sticks were different and all that kind of stuff. You know, and lacrosse is truly a real sport that uses fighting the way hockey thinks it does. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. No, I tell everybody, you know, again, I just love doing the games. I love going to the games. I love bringing people for their first time because, you know, it sounds like the old, you know, Top Fuel dragster saying, when you buy a ticket, but you only keep the edge of the seat.
That's
and
right.
I tell people who have never, I've told people never, you know, have never been before, come on over and you know, we'll get you, you'll get one game, we'll get you for life. And I've had that with a lot of people.
Now, who in particular surprised you that love the game and, though, you know, like, I guess I'm trying to identify the type of people that enjoy lacrosse. I know the stock answer will be all types, but in your mind, who's surprised, has anyone surprised you that they didn't like the sport that you thought you would and you've had trouble figuring out why they didn't like it, or somebody who thought wouldn't like it but did? Does it have that kind of personal touch?
Yeah, I've got one from both ways. I've got someone who I guess I maybe overhyped the game, and he went and said, yeah, it was okay. And on the flip side, I've got three female friends who wouldn't go to a sporting event if you paid them to. Took them to one rock game, and they were hooked.
So the only way to find out if you'll like the game is to go.
If we get you through the door, and hopefully, you know, again, and I like the fact, too, that the seats are a lot more affordable. I tell people you can get four people for a rock game for parking at a Leaf game.
There you go. And I'm of the firm belief that, you know, it's amazing how also – now, I do a CFL show, and I've spent some time, you know, getting warm and fuzzy with the CFL. In that
yep.
time, I've become aware, and I'm well aware of the fact that there are similarities between the in Toronto here anyway – if I can, you know, talk about the fishbowl that is Toronto. Both the Argos and the Rock have the same challenges, don't they?
Absolutely. It's ironic you said that because, of course, I also was the sideline announcer for the Calgary Stampeders. And, you know, out west, you know, Regina, Edmonton, Calgary, CFL is a big deal. And the Roughnecks, you know, when I was with them, they were a tough sell because, of course, at that time they weren't owned by the Flames. They were only a tenant at the Saddle Dome, and they had to promote. They had to market the team, same as the Rock. You know, yes, they played the ACC, but they're not under that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment marketing umbrella.
There are side benefits to being associated with the NHL team, as is in Calgary.
Yeah, because you get, you know, you get percentages of concessions and parking, and that's the problem that, you know, Brad Bannister, the former owner of the Roughnecks, had in Calgary. They didn't get concessions. They didn't get parking revenue for games. And, you know, that when you're trying to play, you know, trying to make a budget and pay your players, you needed, you know, but I will say the 2004 championship game was a sold-out house with over close to 21,000 people there going crazy.
Yeah, and by virtue of that, concessions can really make a difference financially.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like, we're lucky because being in the press box, you don't have to pay those exorbitant rates for a hot dog or a sandwich or something, but, you know, I need a second mortgage for a slice of pizza.
Well, I've shared the buffet with you. I've shared the buffet with you, and I know I could take you on one-on-one at in the press row, if you will.
Yeah. especially early in the career, it was good. You never had to buy groceries.
Oh, no kidding.
Wait for a 10-day Blue Jay homestand.
Yes. See, you took the words right out of my mouth. The Blue Jays changed everything when it came to in-house media feeding frenzies.
Cool.
I mean, they literally had... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, especially the old C&E, because you always tell who the visiting team was. If it was the Yankees, it was steak and lobster. If it was Cleveland, it was dogs and burgers.
There you go. And, yes, it was amazing. Those were good times. And the press box was, you know, wasn't big league baseball, so it was more like a cafeteria.
No.
And,
yeah.
And it was kind of funny. Seeing all the famous reporters are there, and you were one of the boys. I was one of the outsiders. You know, I was that cable kid. But, you know, you were one of the insiders, and I always used to admire the fact that you had so many friends and you were so kind to me. You didn't have to be. You were very helpful, and you tended to answer a lot of questions for guys. You seem to have a lot of inside tips. You have those same things with the Rocks. The Rock, you could get anything. Not necessarily for nothing, but you could source almost anything. You were pretty good at that. You still good at that?
Yeah, it's still a lesser in the now the day and age because, of course, I don't go to all the Jays. I've been to one Jays game in the 3 years that I've been back from Alberta. But, like, for example, I was looking through some pictures the other day, and there's a picture when I worked in Calgary with backstage of the ZZ Top Show. But who's in that front row with us in the picture is Doug Flutie. Because he wanted to go meet ZZ Top. And I've got pictures with Dave, Steve, and Gary Gruber. Sorry, I'm nursing a little bit of a throat problem tonight.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, listen, we don't have to drag any. We don't want to hurt your, you know, your throat.
Oh,
is
no,
pissed.
It's okay. Just it's just a little dry here. But no, I'm saying, you know, that we had, you know, and that's one thing I like about it is, but the Rock guys, and you know, with lacrosse guys compared to baseball or hockey,
oh God,
you know, we call them. They are, you know, they are the weekend warriors. They have regular jobs during the week, and then Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, they're at a, you know, a rink playing lacrosse.
And there is an association for those that follow my program, and if they've bumped into Wednesday, and now notice that for those of you that are not noticing a CFL talk here, yeah, we have changed 9-11 every Wednesday. Now we've changed our time, and we will be talking The Rock every Wednesday. And the reason we pick Wednesday is because it's one of the only days where there aren't any games, and we don't want to interfere with anybody's ability to enjoy the game, which includes me. So
Why
we're on it this time. There are friendships, if you will. Maybe friendships is the wrong term. An association between the Rock and, of course, the Toronto Argonauts. And I'm sure the same is true in Calgary, where the players from the Rock go to a CFL game and the players from the Argos go to an NLL game. And
yep,
it really
absolutely.
Is. And they have a lot of similarities. You know, they're pretty much down-to-earth guys. You know, they're not, you know, $20 million, $300 million over 10-year contracts. So they're pretty, you know, they're the kind of guys that you go to a post-game location where they hang out. You have a beer with the guy and you can talk about the game as if, you know, you guys were friends for a long time. That must be refreshing for you.
Well, you hit the nail on the head because, you know, again, back in the day, the first year with The Rock, there was the post-game parties. And, you know, here's a fan. Would you ever see, you know, you and I after a Leaf game going to a restaurant for a bite and, oh, Dion Phaneuf comes over or Phil Kessel comes over? No, not a chance. But, you know, in Calgary, they even had anybody that wanted to. All the players came out after the game and signed autographs on the floor. It was very fan-friendly, which I think some of the hockey guys are forgetting now.
Yeah, you know, not to cast dispersions, but there was a time when hockey players had they had no reputation. I think that's the way I should say it. They were just, you know, they were nice Canadian boys, and everybody was impressed with their attitude. Unfortunately, you know, big money enters into it, and, you know, you have cross-pollination of cultures, you know, and then it ends up becoming a different thing. I'm not saying worse. I'm not saying better. I'm just saying different. And sometimes people don't like change. And some people who are hockey fans were more accustomed to, you know, more down-to-earth guys, like a Carl Brewer. If anybody was around, anybody my age, if you ever ended up near or around Carl Brewer, he would sit and have a beer with you forever, especially if you can imagine he was a hockey player who got paid to play hockey, and then he did it for fun as well. So, yeah, it's a different type of person, and it is, you know, you really do feel like, you know, glad to be around these guys. And to be honest and blunt and almost, I guess, I don't like saying it because it almost sounds like a put-down, but it isn't. It is, like you said, an affordable sport where you can go and enjoy guys working really hard, really, really hard to make a living, but play a game they love playing. And that's what's similar with the CFL.
Yeah, and see, I also liken it to what we call the game experience too. Like the CFL has the, you know, the guy with a mic on the sideline getting the crowd into it, like what I do at the Rock games.
Right.
I think that's an advantage. You can imagine going to a Leaf game and Andy gets to go, you know, Kessel on a breakaway score. You know, like he can't do that, but I can in lacrosse talk while the play is going on.
Exactly.
And I think that
and
enhances
music. And,
that enhances
and
the experience.
It sure does.
Yep.
And
oh, yeah,
the music doesn't necessarily stop. Yeah, the music doesn't stop either. So, you know, it's an interesting game. When I used to do the play-by-play of the Toronto Beaches lacrosse team, it was a workout because there's a lot going on very quickly, you know. And you know, the nice thing about being a play-by-play guy, maybe I shouldn't be giving away any secrets, but there's stock phrases that you have. In lacrosse, I think you might have a few more stock phrases.
Yeah, you can definitely. Well, the thing is, too, especially with lacrosse, you also don't want to copy someone else's line, right?
Oh, okay.
Going into this season, in longevity, I'm number two behind Chris Swenson with the Buffalo Bandits, otherwise known as Swenny. And, of course, he was the first guy I ever heard. And, you know, with his Johnny Who for Tavares. So you don't ever want to borrow someone's line, like the traditional what's he got when the goalie makes a save in Buffalo. Well, actually, we kind of borrowed that in Calgary, and I felt kind of almost cheap saying it. It wasn't my call to do it. It was the producer of the game. It's like you'll never hear a holy Mackinac out of me because, hey, I still think that firmly belongs to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and I know Joe Bowen uses it, but, you know, to me, I hear holy Mackinac, I'm going to yell Tigers eat them raw at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. And you did come up with the example that I have. Or, you know, a cannonading drive, you know.
Yep.
There have been so many catchphrases that, you know, that...
My favorite
that
is still Caught in the Paraphernalia. Caught in the Paraphernalia is my favorite from the Danny Gallivan.
Yeah, that's your favorite? I like the Spinorama.
Yep.
The Savardian Spinorama.
Lately I've found, you know, especially guys need to have that hook catchphrase. And for me, when I did play-by-play of the Alberta Junior Hockey League, it never came to me. Like, everyone's got a little, as soon as the final buzzer goes, I just said it was either a win or a loss for the team I was calling for. I didn't have this, you know, the Yankees win, like something like that. It's just not my style, I guess.
Well, you know what? Style aside, your longevity and the fun that you've had, it is great, and you must feel fortunate to be able to be, you know, I talked to Hoagie as well, Mike Hoagie,
yep.
You know, who does what you do with the Argonauts. And, you know, it is really a thrill to do that kind of stuff, you know, to be able to do play-by-play of a team that you've admired for so long. And, you know, in his case, lucky son of a gun, the Argos won the Grey Cup in 2012, and didn't they present him with a ring? You have any rings for the Toronto Rock?
I have three.
Wow!
I have the 2000, the 2002, and the 2003.
How did
and then
that
of
make
course
you,
I went
how,
to get.
Yeah, and then you went. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Then I got my fourth NLL ring in 2004 with the Roughnecks. And then in 2007, got my first hockey ring with the Camrose Kodiaks as we won the Alberta Junior and went to the Royal Bank Cup. So I always said I wanted one, and I'll do a Cole's Notes version of the story because it ties into the first ring. A friend of mine was with the Jays front office, and when they won in 92 and 93, I went to both of those World Series as a reporter. But he was going away for like a little trip to Australia, didn't want to take the rings with him, and he wanted to trust them with someone who he knew wouldn't, you know, steal them on him. So I got to guard his 92 and 93 Grey Cup or World Series rings. And he said, you know, if you want, you can make a copy of one because you were around the team. So I have a little jeweler out in Oshawa. I took it out to him, and he said to me, looks at me, he goes, can I be honest with you? And I said, sure. He goes, I can make you a copy of this. He says, but why don't you earn one?
Uh-huh.
I thought, you know what? Yeah,
I said, yeah, okay. So back in May of 2000, some dub it the greatest indoor lacrosse game in history when Caleb Toth scores with 1 second left to beat Rochester. A couple of months later, we were at an event at Bradwater's house, and he called us all in and gave me a little box. I opened it up, and I saw, you know, 2000 world champions, Toronto Rock logo, diamonds all around it. But when I turned to the side and saw Barker, I had to go into Bradwater's backyard, and I bawled my eyes out. Like, that was, I had finally got the one I wanted.
And well-deserved.
And I was and I was happy then, of course. Then you know, we won in Albany in 2002, finally won in Rochester in 2003, and that roughneck Buffalo game was another classic at the Saddle Dome. But, yeah, because you're technically part of the front office as a PA guy, you do qualify for a ring. So, you know, I wanted one. I've got four. So,
well, good.
You know, this
good
year could
you.
Be one for the thumb.
There you go. Yeah, a bigger one. That guy in the Jay's office wasn't Howard Starkman, was it?
No, he didn't work in the same department. But unfortunately, he's no longer. He worked in the media relations department, but he's no longer with the team. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Howard Starkman was the guy that basically made sure that we had all the information we needed immediately. Great guy. He passed away too early in life.
Yeah, no, and you know what? And it's just a good guy that you know, for, especially again, starting off as a young reporter. And, you know, you're sitting in a press box when the Yankees are in. And we're talking, you know, we're talking early 80s, right? Late 70s, early 80s. And I got to interview, like, the legendary Mel Allen, the play-by-play voice of, you know, and he's the host of This Week in Baseball. And then Howie Starkman walks down the press box and goes, anybody want to do some reporting for CBS? So I stuck my hand up. And then for the next three seasons, I was CBS Radio's Toronto Stringer. And I would do. I would send, you know, audio from the Jays games. But then, the day after the Jays clinched in '85, and you remember George Bell going to his knees when he caught in the pit. Yeah. Well, the next day, if you remember, they still had to play the Yankees. They'd already clinched, but there's still the Sunday game that had to be played because they clinched on the Saturday. It happened to be that Phil Niekro won his 300th game that day. So halfway through the game, I get a phone call in the press box, and Howie calls my name, and it's guys at CBS going, can you do play-by-play of the final inning of Niekro's 300th win? Because we don't have any, you know, any play-by-play guys there. So I had to go outside the press box and record on my old tape recorder the last inning. And CBS played that with me calling Phil Niekro's 300th career win in Major League Baseball, which is kind of cool.
Very cool
for a 25-year-old guy, year-old guy at the time.
Well, you remember when my biggest thrill was when George Bush at the time was only the governor of Texas, and he showed up at the game.
And threw out the
And the security that was there was just incredible.
Do you remember when every time they moved, we had to stop?
That's right.
Like I remember walking in. Yeah, every time it was like, you know, security going, well, Papa Bear's on the move. So, like, we were stopped in the hallway until they were back to being a non-moving, secure location.
And it was like you know, like a swarm of bees. You know, like you'd be in an empty area, and all of a sudden, people literally being told to go over there. Be over there. You can't be over here. You got to be over there. It was the weirdest experience. And I had it was hard to even have a look at him. I had a look at him. I was trying to have a look at him. I said, see this governor guy, you know, this guy didn't have no idea that he would become president twice. You know, and it was incredible that the way that they protect presidents and governors and here in Canada, we're not used to that kind of stuff. It was bizarre. And the great players that show up, you know, at games and stuff, and a lot of them are just love to. Well, Yogi Berra was my favorite. He would talk to anybody for any amount of time, and he was a walking encyclopedia about baseball, and he was a wonderful, wonderful guy to listen to. He was funny, but he did it deadpan. It was amazing when he talked. Like, people hear all the funny stuff that he says, but he said it like with a deadpan, like as if he was demented.
No, I remember being in the infamous Dave Winfield
God, the Seagulls,
okay?
God.
And there's Billy Martin ranting, raving, like the first time that someone's hit the cutoff man all year. And then Yogi comes up and he goes, so what are they going to do with the Boyd? And I'm like, the Boyd is probably going to be already in the trash bin there. But, you know, again, he was a character. And that was the one thing, too, about baseball, you know. And I wish, you know, and that's one thing I do, of course, with lacrosse. Is like, we're there so early because for a 7:30 or 8 o'clock game, we have a production meeting at 5 o'clock and go over the scripts and everything. So usually you can go down by the dressing room and sit on the bench, talk to guys, you know, and that's what I loved about baseball was batting practice. I had more fun at batting practice, sitting in the dugout, talking to guys, than there was watching the game. And the people who, of course, don't know that from the reporter standpoint, but, you know, that's how I got to become friends with guys like George Brett Saberhagen, Mark Gubazaw, you know, like, you know, they were just, because you could sit and talk with them for half an hour during BP.
And you know, the thing that amazed me, I had the good fortune of being to one of the World Series games. I think it was the first time they won the World Series. But I remember Jimmy Key pitching, and I remember standing at field level. Now imagine this, folks. You're sitting at home right now because I want you to hear this, and I got a guy who knows I'm telling the truth. And I tell people this, and they think I'm telling stories. Cito Gaston did not care whether it was during the game, after the game. If he was sitting there, and he didn't care if you sat down beside him. I actually sat down beside Cito Gaston during the game. He was such an amiable kind of guy who was, you know, they really did. He really, I don't understand where he got the reputation he did. Everything I saw about Cito Gaston was all about being a pretty accepting person. What was your recollection of him?
Well, I had the task of being invited to Cito Gaston's stag when he got married in Toronto. So, to me, I always found him one of the most accommodating, nice guy managers. He wasn't, you know, grumpy like Earl Weaver. But, of course, if you had a question, he'd answer it. And, again, he would also, if he didn't really know, you know, if he could even ask him baseball strategy, and as the skipper, he would tell you. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, he was one of those guys that, you know, you could sit down and in batting practice was on. He'd, you know, or especially in spring training, he'd kill hours with us.
Oh, absolutely. He was a great guy. Not like Jimmy Williams. Jimmy Williams was a little more high strung.
Yeah,
just a little bit more high strung. Okay, enough about the baseball and remembering the days that I hung out with you.
We're going down memory lane, buddy. I apologize.
No. It was my thrill. Totally my thrill. It was a wonderful time, and you know, basically, Toronto at that time didn't. You know, lacrosse was very popular at that time, in the sense that the stands they were full. The Argos had the same thing, and I keep drawing these analogies and these similarities. Well, right now the team's not getting as many people. What do you see as needing to be or identify the resolution to bringing back the bigger crowds in lacrosse? Is it only about winning, or?
I think, you know, the thing is, especially with the Rock standpoint, of course, people got, you had a champion in 1999, you were a champion in 2000, you were a champion in 02, you were a champion in 03, you were a champion in 05, okay? Leafs, last time, 67.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what I think, like maybe some of the lacrosse fans thought, oh, they're going to win every year or every other year, but, you know, lately, especially the last couple of years, the National Lacrosse League, parity-wise, there isn't really a doormat team anymore. You don't have team. Like, when Edmonton was bad, you don't have that, oh, well, we're going to Alberta for a two-game road trip. Well, we'll have a tough one with Calgary, but we'll kick the crap out of Edmonton. And now they're strong. You know, Vancouver, formerly Washington, they're strong. You know, there isn't a weak sister in the league anymore.
And I
know
think
our
that
friends
was...
in Rochester will agree to that, but I think the thing is, too, the Toronto fans got complacent with a good team and a good champion. And, you know, yes, we're getting the 11 and 12,000 crowds. We're not getting the 18s and 19s like we used to get.
But do you see...
And I also attribute it, too, to, you know, downtown Toronto is not a cheap place to park anymore.
Yeah. No, and not only not cheap, it's even, you even got to walk a long ways after, you know, to park your car. So it's
trust
not
me,
even...
at the Bills game a couple of weeks ago, the closest lot to the Rogers Center was $75 to park your car. I said,
wow.
For $75, you better wash it, armor all it, and put one of those Pine air fresheners in there.
And a date.
Yeah, well, that's always in the contract.
All right, so you know, the Rock is one team in a league that, as you say, you were beautifully, you know, basically a good move on your part, because the next thing I wanted to say was last year things didn't end well for the Toronto Rock. The Minnesota Swarm came in, a team that wasn't favored in that game. What happened, in your opinion? And Aaron, by the way, if you have any questions, please jump in. He'll answer this question, and then you can join in as well.
Aaron sits in the booth with me, and you know, you had a team that did really well in the regular season, of course, and back, you know, and until this year, it was a one and done playoff, right? So
yes.
When Minnesota jumped out to that lead, like there was a lead that I just knew in the first quarter they weren't coming back, and Aaron and I looked at each other going, this is going to be a hard job for me tonight to keep this crowd into it, because they were up like 6-1 or 7-1.
It was devastating. It was devastating.
Yeah, and that was the one where you thought, you know, I just thought they really have to pull this one out, and they just didn't have it. Kind of reminded me of the 2001 game between the Rock and Philadelphia, when Philadelphia came from behind and won that game, when everyone thought the Rocket was a lock for it, but. Yeah, that game, there just wasn't a good vibe.
Was it because how habitual the Rock players, lacrosse players, they played on a day on a Sunday. That game was a Sunday, wasn't it?
That's right.
And they didn't play many afternoon games, let alone Sunday.
No, and you know, that's the thing. Like, they're so used to either a Friday night or a Saturday night, and sometimes because you get the Friday night at home and Saturday, they're either in Philly or vice versa. They're in Philly or Buffalo on the Friday, and they're at home. But, yeah, it just, as I said, the whole thing just didn't feel right. It wasn't the right time of day. It wasn't the right, you know, like, I did the play-by-play for the Toronto Phantoms of the Arena Football League. They only lasted 2 years because the schedule they got, it was a summer sport, and they got like the Saturday of the Canada Day weekend and the Saturday of the May 2-4 weekend. Well, sports fans are at their cottage or at a bar. They're not going indoors to watch an indoor football game because of scheduling. And I just think if it was a night game, you would have seen a better verdict.
And that's kind of the kind of handicap that the Rock have, not scheduling as much, but it's an expensive proposition to have that team play at the ACC.
Well, and that's the thing, and take a look, as I said earlier, like, they're not part of MLSE, so you've got the Leafs as the primary tenant, the Raptors as the secondary, then you've got Concerts as number three, and then the Rock, number four.
Yeah, and they end up with...
At least we're like Rochester, where they got bumped for a circus.
Remember that debacle.
Oh, was that my outside voice? I remember they had to, I think it was a playoff game or a championship game, and they had already booked the circus, not thinking the team was going to go all the way to the finals.
And that's where parity comes into play again.
Yes.
Because everybody
absolutely.
Was so evenly matched. Rochester at that point in the season, when the circus was initially booked, didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs.
No.
So.
Well, that was the same thing in 2000, like in Calgary. You know, again, you're not the primary tenant, so you take, like, I'll give the Rock credit for this year. This 2014 schedule, I'm very happy with it. There's one Sunday game, and there's, you know, you don't have, you know, there's always Fridays or Saturdays. It was a couple of years they tried a Thursday night game. Not good.
Oh,
people want to go home, they want to go home from work. They don't want to go to the rink and finally get home about 9:10 at night.
Well, some teams have got Thursday games scheduled because those are the Thursday to Sunday. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, they don't play at all. There isn't a game on a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, at least when I remember scanning it to decide to reinforce the idea that I do this program on a Wednesday because there are no games.
No, absolutely.
You know, and the CFL is the same thing. And unfortunately, when you're a tier two sports franchise, and that, I'm not saying this as a knock, but quite frankly, by definition, a tier two team is one that does not get first crack at home dates, and that is
absolutely
critical. And it is
like, for example,
critical.
if you get a Friday night, and you know they'll say, oh, you know, Beyonce's got a tour coming through. We can get her on a Friday night at $300 a ticket. Yeah, okay, see ya. And then Toronto Rock, you can play Sunday afternoon against Rochester at 1:30.
Yes. Not a good deal. Well, listen, let's move on from the political side of this wonderful sport. We'll take a short break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll talk specifically about the NLL. And do you feel comfortable talking about some of the other teams in the where you see – and Aaron, this is where you're going to have to start getting in here because you're Mr. Brains of lacrosse. Okay, buddy?
More than
all
happy
right.
to.
Let's give a little plug to The Rock.
Versus Calgary, Friday, January 3rd. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com.
The National Lacrosse League, NLL, is North America's professional indoor lacrosse league, featuring the best players in the world competing for the sport's most coveted prize, the Champions Cup. Founded in 1986, the NLL ranks third in average attendance for professional indoor sports worldwide, behind only the National Hockey League and the NBA. The 2014 NLL regular season, which marks the league's 28th year, opens on Saturday, December 28th. The league is comprised of 9 franchises across the U.S. and Canada. We have the Buffalo Bandits, the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, the Minnesota Swarm, the Philadelphia Wings, the Rochester Nighthawks, the Toronto Rock, and of course, the Vancouver.
So now all the players have agreed to a 7-year, player agreement with the league. What do you think
CBA.
Of that? The CBA, yeah. What do you think of that? Is it something that will solidify the league, strengthen the league? Every time the CBA is signed, every league says, well, now we're looking up. Can they say that with this agreement?
I think this is great that they got 7 years out of this because a couple of years, you know, we were waiting for like a week before the season to make if they're going to make their minds up if they're going to play or not, which, again, hurts them when you're trying to book arena time because if you're not going to be playing, how are you going to book an arena? So, no, I think having 7 years is good. They seem to be they're staying away from, you know, we haven't had expansion. We had a team move from, Everett, Washington to Vancouver, Langley, B.C., so it wasn't much of upheaval in the off season. You had some pretty big name players not make rosters this year. The other day when they released the final rosters, including names like Ethan Iannucci and Gavin Prout, you know, released from their respective clubs. So I just think, you know, and again, with, you know, looking at it from a Rock standpoint, you've got Cam Woods retired, most of the guys back, from last year's team, except for Mike Hobbins, who just got picked up by Minnesota, which I thought was a good pickup for them.
The one thing that the new CBA has, and I kind of like it, for reasons that I'm one of these people that believes that if a team wants to win, they should be allowed to spend money, but they should be punished for it. But it at least gives them an opportunity for the fans that are really hungry for a winner, to have a chance. You know, hockey's become a sport where you don't have big city advantage. In fact, the advantage is the opposite. It's for the small market teams because, quite frankly, they don't have to bring anybody in. They can fly under the radar. and catch teams that have to win or should win, or their fans, like the Leafs, for example, expect them to win. The luxury tax gives an opportunity to the teams that have some money to spend it. You know, you can't go crazy. You can't be like a drunken sailor. What do you think of the luxury tax?
Great idea, because you know what? Again, if you, I think the fact is you want to have good quality teams if they spend the money. And again, we'll use the New York Yankees as an example. Like, you know, I know their attitude is like, yeah, we'll just get anybody we want. We'll pay the tax later. But I think if we, you know, if they look at the whole thing with the NLL, they're trying now, if it was more of a what I call a full-time sport, because Aaron will vouch for this too, that towards the end of the season, we look at each other in the booth going, and we're just hitting our stride up there, and it's already the playoffs. If
yeah.
we had, you know, even 20, 40 games, 20 home, 20 road, that would be great. But, you know, with only 9-9, it's just not much right now. And again, as I say, you hit your stride, and it's like, oh, sorry, I've already left the buffet. Too bad I didn't bring my plate.
So the
sensation
go ahead, Eric.
Warmed up. That I think is the one thing that kind of upsets me the most about the duration of the season. I would love to see a 20 game home, 20 game road, 40 game season. I think that would be great. 18 as it stands, it's not enough of a taste. You know what I mean? I mean that just whets your appetite without putting it to bed.
It's lacrosse foreplay.
Pretty much.
The luxury tax doesn't really speak to more games, but is the luxury tax a sign that possibly more games are in the offing? Is that your take on it, guys?
I think they're going to go slowly, like if they add some more teams, of course, but I think they need to get it to where, you know, the fans know they're, you know, again, we're talking, you know, way into the future, but it would be great if we could get 20-20, man. That would be the best Christmas present ever for me.
I'm just thinking of the fact that right now, with the fact they've got a 7-year CBA in place for the NLLPA and the NLL, this gives them an opportunity to work on something like that. There's not going to be that upheaval every 2 to 3 years that you have with this. And we've already seen some signs of that, too. There have been 3 or 4 year contracts that have been signed by some players. Colin Doyle just re-upped for 3 years. One of the players in Edmonton, I think it was Mark Matthews, signed a 4-year deal.
There's a lot of threes and fours, and there's even a couple of 7-year deals.
Yeah, and that, I think, to me, speaks well for the stability for the league. It also speaks well to for the owners when they're looking at the durability of these players. And the fact that they're willing to commit, it's not chump change, but it's not, at the same time, it's not a large amount of money, but they're willing to commit to that. And that, I think, is important.
And also getting big name sponsorships too. Like you've got our Under Armour, New Era this year, pretty big name companies with the NLL.
Is that due to the new wave of broadcasting that the internet has become?
Oh yeah, definitely.
By definitely.
Like let's look back at the days when we were both starting out. You couldn't, you didn't have Twitter, didn't have Facebook. We had the old boat anchor cell phones. And now today, you know, geez, we could be, Aaron is tweeting from the Rock game. What am I saying? He is. I'm too busy.
I do have a tendency to live tweet and Facebook update during the games as well as take pics from up there, don't I?
Oh, yeah, but it's good, though. As I said, you know, because if people are following and they're not at the game, it's almost like, you know, and again, that's the instantaneous thing about it.
And I was referring to if you can't get, like, augmenting they're with TSN, right? They're originally with Rogers
yeah.
Sportsnet, but now you guys are with TSN because the guy that used to do reporting for me on the sports magazine show I did walked the sidelines, Claude Fague.
Claude
Fague,
TSN. Yep.
It's amazing how the internet and they have their network thing where you can see every game of the NLL on YouTube, on
yep.
the NLL channel. Now, is there advertising on those? Is it just something they're throwing up there to keep their name out there?
I was going to say, Aaron would probably be better to answer that than me, because I remember a couple of games that they were actually using the team scoreboard feed.
Yeah, for the most part, they are actually using the scoreboard feed, so whatever ads you see are going to be coming off that.
You see the giant animated hands clapping, you know, or go, you know, go rush, go.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be pretty bad, but sometimes it's entertaining.
But the point being, and this is what if I can, on a much smaller, I see as the next step that they're doing. The National Hockey League, in their agreement with Rogers, essentially, this exclusivity thing is where it relates with the Rock and with the NLL, is that you can give away it's like, you know, our friends in newspapers for years now, Bruce, we've been, you know, lamenting the fact for our friends that their jobs are just disappearing, you know, and there's nowhere for them to go. And now they're turning up on television and stuff like that. So now what happens is the newspapers are showing up at our door. They're offering us $1 a week, you know, because they've come to the realization that there's no point to them charging, because what they need are, they need eyes. They need people to see the advertising that's in the newspaper. The National Hockey League, I maintain that my beef with the National Hockey League and the NLL can take a page out of the National Hockey League. They're colonializing Canada. And the way they're doing that is that they're creating a market that doesn't require a local team. Rogers now is going to basically show road teams. The irony is, two American teams will be playing against each other up against a Leaf game when an Ottawa game has to be blacked out, which to me is ridiculous. But then again, it's all about advertising. So now the American teams will take on sponsors from Canadian corporations like Tim Hortons, TD Bank, Bank of Nova Scotia. It's an endless number of advertisers. So now what's happening is Canadians are paying for a team that exists elsewhere, because the advertising is being sold elsewhere but being played locally here in Canada, essentially in reverse, doing to Canadians what's going on with the NFL. The NFL won't come here. We don't have any NFL teams. In hockey, because of that making the world a bigger place, we're basically being frozen out of having, let's say, a second team in Toronto, which is well suited, to happen. The NLL can do the same thing. I think the next thing they probably should do is with that network is tighten it up a little bit. I'm sure they can find some people to do play-by-play like yourself who wouldn't mind doing it for almost a song. And because I really see an opportunity there in the Internet. I say that because in the CFL, the NBC and ESPN have grown more and more interested with the CFL because of the experiment over the Internet, and how people in the U.S. Found it, watch it, and now their eyes are being counted. And again, that same parallel, I see the same fit for the NLL and the CFL. They both have the same problems, and I think they both have the same solutions. I hope that didn't sound like a soapbox. I was just trying to point out, I guess.
No, I totally agree. That's the thing. Like,
you need to find a way to reach your audience, right? And then you need to find a way to grow that audience. And sometimes the dumbest, you know, like out of the mouths of babes is all I've got. Maybe that's what I should say. The simple way to say it is out of the mouths of babes. You accidentally trip over a good idea. And I wish the best to the NLL. We're going to be doing this show every week, and we're going to try to reach out to the NLL just as we've reached out to you. Aaron's doing a great job. He's trying as hard as he can to reach out to these people, and hopefully the next thing I was Aaron John, our buddy at on the CFL show, he suggested we have the owner of the Rock, his son, on. What is he, 11 or 12 or something, and he whips the crowd into a frenzy? Is that what he does? Tell me about him. I don't know anything about him.
I think we had him up there once for his birthday. Was it Bruce?
Yeah, well, it was actually Kids Day with The Rock, and we had Jamie Dowick's son come up and do some of the Go Rock Goes and come up in the booth with us. And again, he's good. You know, he's good. That's a great one. That's the one thing I know. Also, they have the theme nights. They have, you know, the salute to the troops night. They usually, you know, there's a third jersey that always goes to charity. So The Rock are out there. I think I think Aaron will agree with me at this, from the box office standpoint this year, doing the upper bowl $99 for the entire season ticket is a great idea to get those bigger crowds back in. When you can get all nine games for $11 each up in the upper bowl, you know, I'm a season ticket holder for it. It only cost me $100.
Yeah, they used to do that where they had what they called the OLA season pass for a couple of years. They also had the Toronto Sun pass. The first time they did the Toronto Sun pass, I think it was $70.
Yeah.
That was about 5 or 6 years ago. But, yeah, you know, 9 games for $11 a pop is the best value pretty much in sports anywhere. I mean, unless you're going to the Canadian Professional Basketball League or the National Basketball League watching the Mississauga Power Play, you're not going to find a better deal for more entertaining sports. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Great deal.
I love Aaron when he goes, "Oh, you're right, the Canadian Basketball League. Oh, they have a team in Mississauga?"
As a matter of fact, they do.
Hey, guys, take it easy. I used to do the play-by-play for the CBA in Toronto. We've got another. I used to do the CBA games, the Toronto Tornadoes. Stop making fun of them. Okay, who do we have on now joining us? We have another caller. Hello?
Hey, Frank.
Is it Gary?
It is Gary.
Hey, Gary, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, Gary, what's happening, though?
First of all, Gary,
it's been a long evening, but I'm here, I'm live.
Congratulations. What an eventful day for you.
Yeah, it's been a long day. It was a great day, though.
I don't know, Bruce, if you know, Gary's one of our football people. We're called Argo Lifers. And this Argo Lifer just came from the Raptors game where he sang the national anthem.
Very cool.
Yeah. It was an evening. It was a lot of fun.
And I was so busy getting ready for the show, I forgot about it. And then when I remembered, it was about 8:15. But I think you'd already done it by then.
I'd done it already. Actually, I was actually trying to find a seat. So I was actually just sitting out at the table just trying to get myself together. Wasn't he? Oh, wow, that would probably be the commotion.
Rob Ford was there. There you go. Okay, Gary, first of all, let me introduce you to the crowd. Like I said, you're an Argo lifer. And as I said to Bruce the whole show, there are a lot of parallels between the Toronto Rock and the Toronto Argonauts, the type of men that play the game. The type of game that it is, it's Canadian. Both games are very Canadian. In the case of football, the players are big and strong, but they're really good guys. And
everybody's very accessible in either.
Yeah,
that's the big key right there. It's a very big accessibility in both leagues is major.
And the cost of going to the games is family friendly.
Definitely. Definitely. I know I come on just hearing about the talking about the $11 a game. There's nowhere you're going to find that for professional sports. Nowhere.
Now, Gary, we talked about you're a Rock fan, and for now we're going to have to be satisfied with too much talk about the Rock, but that's because most of us have something to do with the Rock. So, but we are going to expand as we did with the CFL show. Slowly but surely, we will find the Calgary Roughneck fans, the Mammoths, the Vancouver Stealth, the Philadelphia Wings, the Buffalo Bandits. We will find those fans as well as we move along. Share with us what you enjoy about the National Lacrosse League.
Well, there's a number of things, both on the field and off the field, because we do travel with the team quite a bit. In fact, I believe we were at every road game last year except for Calgary and Edmonton. We love it. We have a lot of friends in other cities now because of this, and we keep in contact all through the year. The lacrosse community is a very tight-knit community, and it's wonderful, the people that you meet throughout. On the field, you're not going to find a quicker game, a rougher game. Remember, everything that's illegal in hockey is legal in lacrosse.
Well, not everything. Not everything.
Most everything. Most everything. Well, of course, there's the occasional thing below the belt, right? Other than that, yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's the old adage of, you know, we'll sell you a ticket, but you're only going to need the edge of your seat. You know,
we heard that earlier.
There's always something going on. Did you? I was busy. I didn't hear it. Sorry.
Bruce Parker brought that. You pay for a whole seat and you only get to use the edge.
That's about it, you know.
Now, do you know Bruce Parker?
Our announcer. Gotta love him.
Yeah. Well, he's here in the room with us. Is there a question? Well, let me ask first Aaron. Aaron, do you have any questions? I'm sure there's a million things I didn't cover for Bruce that we can pick his brain here for the new lacrosse fans and old.
You know what? Honestly, I think, Bruce, it's just awesome to talk to you again, buddy. I'm really looking forward to being back in the booth with you this season.
We had a heck of a – we had a great first year together, pal. I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah, I'm just – like I said, I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait for the home opener. The one thing I'd like to know, what's your favorite – other than Caleb scoring with 1.1 seconds left, what's one of the things that you really like to call out or that you really liked to call out?
Well, I will admit my favorite call, other than what going to that game, was always my Speed and Stevie Toll. That to me was the most over the top introduction of a player ever, and that was kind of like, you know, you have your signature calls. So that was that one again. And those teams when you had, you know, the Dan Lattisers, the Steve Tolls, the Pat Coyles, you know, anybody who was on that War on the Floor DVD, and of course, you know, when I got to say Jim Scoop Veltman. So, you know, I think I would love Jamie to bring the nicknames back because I think that gave us a little bit of character. And
so
that,
I think,
you know,
one
again,
of the complaints that some people had with that, though, was it made the team seem more childish.
Yeah, I would, but see, my thing for now would be, you know, if someone has a legitimate nickname, not to make one out, like not sit down and go through the whole roster, what do we call this guy? Like, you know, to lacrosse fans, Josh Sanderson has always been Shooter, right?
Yeah.
And still is, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
he's always
that's what
been
I mean.
Furry
so,
dog.
Yeah. So, you know, if you had guys, I remember the All-Star game in Edmonton when Colin Doyle came up to me because he was with, you know, San Jose at the time, and he goes, hey, by the way, Barks, I'm not Popeye anymore. No, cool. Okay, you're Colin Doyle. That's right. So,
Colin Olive Doyle.
There we go.
Well, you said Popeye.
Well, guys,
but he's still Popeye to us.
Yeah, there we go.
Fans, you know?
I'm going to have to say, guys, I've got to sign off here because, of course, I get up at 2:45 for work, and that's a.m.
Wow, that's tough. Bruce, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our first program.
Oh,
I can't think of a better person to have on first time.
Well, Merry Christmas to you guys, and we'll see you at the rink in 2014.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
Bruce. Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bruce. Enjoy the show. All right, that's Bruce Barks, a Barker, and he's got to go to work at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I'm
that's
not far
like,
off from him.
that's 4 hours away. All right, well,
I'm
listen.
I'm there at 3:30 myself, so.
Okay, well, you know, we only got a half hour left in the show, but if you have to bail, I understand. Tell us, I'm curious, tonight's the night, here it is, the first rock night, Aaron, and we keep bouncing away from lacrosse, you know, and I don't mind doing it because my buddy sang the national anthem at the Raptor game. I mean, that's got to be awesome. What was it? You know, I got a million questions. I'm sure Aaron's got a million questions too. But the biggest one is, how hard was it to remember the national anthem's words?
Well, it's a lot more difficult than you would imagine. There's a lot of pressure out there, but it is a lot of fun. If you can lose sight of, you know, you got people looking at you, and just, you know, focus on what you're doing, you'll be fine.
Now, you're a music teacher, so you're not somebody that, you know, that just been introduced to music. They didn't pick you up off the street.
Right.
You know, the ACC takes a lot of pride, and MLSC takes a lot of pride in who they let sing the national anthem at the ACC. So we know you were vetted. So the words are hard to – there is some difficulty with the words. And what about the sound? That's got to be something else, because being a guy that has experience with that kind of stuff, not that I ever sang a national anthem, it has to be distracting the echo, the reverb, if you will, to be able to keep a pattern going when you've got when you're being ghosted by sound. Do they have that? Do they have the technology of that in control, or is it as bad as I think it might be? Another handicap.
It's not as bad as you think it is, but it's still not great. There's still a whole lot of reverberation and things coming back at you, echoes. So you just have to know what you're doing. If you start trying to listen to what you're doing, you're going to be late, and you're going to get mixed up, and you're going to get lost.
Yeah. And
so you just
so
have
it's
to plow
focused.
Forward. It's the same focused. As when I'm singing in big churches, right? You know, you have big wall ends coming back at you. There's a couple of second delay. If you're listening to what's going on at you, you're late. So you have to just plow forward.
Aaron?
Yeah, no, I've noticed up there there's about a fifth to a quarter of a second delay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad. They've actually managed to get it pretty close to real time when your voice comes back. Up there,
and the microphones are fantastic.
I noticed that.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I was going to say, here's the question for you. Were you singing with canned accompaniment or a live band?
There was no accompaniment.
Oh, just, wow, a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me put it in perspective a little bit, because it wasn't just me tonight. We did it as a caroling group. There was four of us all together.
Oh, very nice.
A cappella, right? Just to get that across, because it was their holiday evening. So they did that as a caroling thing. We came out looking like carolers and sang.
So did you do O Canada with the tune of Wish You a Merry
Star-Spangled
Christmas?
Banner and O Canada.
But was it done to the tune of Wish You a Merry Christmas?
No, we're not going to screw with the
you
national
stayed, you stayed true. This leads me to another question just now. How do you feel about people who how do you – maybe a better way to ask this. How do you, you know, skirt the temptation of altering and moving away from the standard way a national anthem sounds? You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Nothing bothers me more than when we start trying to make this into a top 20 hit. I love the national anthems the way they are. I believe they were written to be that way. They're national anthems. They're not top 40 radio hits. And they should be that way.
Other than the emotional or the style that you brought of four singers together, singing a cappella, kind of barbershop, you stayed true to the tune, and this is my fault because I didn't get a chance to hear it. So I don't know if I'm going to figure out a way how to hear it. I asked some people if they could, if they knew where there was a copy of it to hear. But I'm sure you'll be able to get me a copy of it so that I can.
I'm hoping. I'm still waiting to hear it myself. It sounded very good where I was, but I'm hoping to hear a thing myself.
We're very proud of you, and we talked about your musical. Teaching that you do teach music, so you come by it honestly. Let's bring this to a National Lacrosse League parallel.
Okay.
You work very hard at something, and it's almost the opportunity to do it in that venue almost makes it worthwhile almost to do for nothing, if not nothing. And is that maybe why you and Aaron and myself, oh, I can answer for myself, but do you guys, isn't that something that makes, lacrosse in all those wonderful lacrosse cities in the National Lacrosse League make it so attractive because you really feel the desire and pleasure of these guys performing out there that they're not jaded at all?
Oh, for sure. And like I said when I first got on, it's a very accessible league, very, very easy to talk to anybody at any given time, going right down from general managers right on down. There's none of this stuffiness that you're getting with the upper leagues like NHL or NBA, where not a chance you're going to get an opportunity. And if you do, it's going to be a brief brush-off of some. Here, though, they have lots of time for you. And it's a fantastic thing, and I hope that never leaves as big as the league's going to become at some point.
But you do understand, because of your experience tonight, you can understand what makes it so wonderful to do, and how really, I know it sounds corny and almost, you know, superficial or politically correct, maybe, I don't know. But really, money isn't what sports is all about. It isn't what it was intended to be.
No, not at this level. Not at all. No, this is for the enjoyment of. This is for the sheer fun of. And it's just a nationalistic thing, too. I really enjoyed doing this evening.
Now,
it's not about being paid for it.
Yeah, but you derive a lot of satisfaction from it. And I guess, I think sometimes there's a few people out there. I'll use this example. And, Aaron, I'm sure you experienced this with what do you call your cup where everybody who isn't a player plays?
Yes. Yeah.
The
fan cup. Thank you.
Friends over the summer, and it's in its 12th year now, going on 13, and when it's in Chicago next summer. So it's basically a bunch of fans that get together for the love of the game and beat the heck out of each other for a day and drink with each other all night. It works out great.
Would it be an unfair statement on my part that maybe you guys take it even more serious than the guys on the Bandits, The Rock, et cetera?
It was that way, but we retired the actual trophy.
Okay.
Yeah, we decided it was getting a little too competitive and scaled it back a bit so that, you know, it's not... you still get bragging rights for the year, but, you know, it's not as intense as it was. I think people are finally understanding that you can't really take it as serious as all that, because you're going to blow a gasket if you do.
Yeah, so, again, to the point where it isn't about money, it's about winning. So sometimes money is a wonderful side issue, but really sometimes it can interfere with the deep-seated, guttural, athletic competition. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to watch a CFL game or you watch an NLL game, I hate to say this, but I really do feel that the majority of players there, a higher percentage of the players that are out there during these games with these teams, are giving far more than the professionals are. It seems to me more and more, especially after the quote attributed to the goaltender for the Leafs who wears a crucifix on the back of his helmet and does not say a nasty word to anybody. I'm referring to Reimer. This guy is a prince of a kid. He's a respectful kid. He doesn't, never swears, always smiles, and he used the term BS. And he was talking about the players on his team that he felt hung him out to dry, and I think less about that he just thought it was stupid, the excuses and all this kind of stuff. And it almost seems like money ruins the sport, almost, you know, the enjoyment of the fan going to enjoy the sport. We don't have that kind of problem with the National League Lacrosse. The guys are given everything they got because they want to be there. Is that a fair statement as well?
I definitely think that is. Gary, what do you think?
Yeah, I do too, yes. You've got to remember, these guys are mostly weekend warriors. They all have jobs they're going to. So this is mostly for the love of. You're not going to get rich doing this. So it's not about corruptness. This is about the love of the game and the competitive spirit.
And do you
and
think a lot
honest,
of people are missing?
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Frank.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, if the Toronto Rock were to call me and say, we're going to use you as a practice target, I would be perfectly happy with that.
Be a blocking dummy for him, no problem.
You know, seriously, I'll stand there in front of the net while you guys pelt balls at me at 90 miles an hour. I don't care. I love the game I took a bus 32 hours round trip to Philadelphia just to watch a game. You know? Like, I do it because I love it. Fan Cup every year is a money loser for me, guaranteed. But I do it because I love the game. I love the people that surround the game. I mean, heck, even last year, I don't know if you saw it, Gary, because I don't think you were a fan in Rochester, I had a sumo wrestling match with another
really?
Goalie.
That's brilliant.
And who else is I going to wrestle with but Fat Side from Buffalo? You know?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dude.
Of all the guys.
I'm still trying to find footage of it.
That's hilarious. I would have loved to have been there to see that.
If I find it, I'll post it. But yeah, no. All of us play because we're basically big goofy idiots. It's what we do. We have a heck of a lot of fun doing it. And that's pretty much all there is to it for us. That's the be all and end all. Strap on the gear, get on the floor, have fun with friends, and hoist the pint afterwards. Because, you know.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do that during the year when we're going after the games. You know, let's say Philadelphia, they invited us to the tailgate. They took us right in. It was awesome to spend all the time with all these other guys. Guys you'd only see from the message boards. You can put faces to names. You know, same thing with Rochester. Same thing. It goes everywhere you want to go. And it's amazing, the community. Because it's still a smaller league, the community is a very tight-knit community. And it goes for fan as well.
Exactly. I mean, I can go to Buffalo, Rochester, Philadelphia, Chicago. Well, when Chicago had a team, and I know I pretty much got a place to sleep if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not so big yet that you can't crash out on somebody's couch.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And the same thing when they're coming here.
Yeah.
You know, it's always great to meet up with them afterward, during, whatever, and just have a. It's a fabulous evening because. You get a chance to talk with them, and usually a lot of it has to do with lacrosse and everything. So it makes it even more. It's the tie that binds.
Exactly, and they are essentially my extended family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree.
You know, wherever I am, I know they'll be there. I know they'll hold me out if I need it, and they are some of the best friends I've ever made, which is just awesome. And it's gratifying to know that I have extended family pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally.
But yeah, that's our take on the whole thing, Frank. Now you've been around with Jarrett for a couple of years now. You can sort of see where we're coming from on this sort of thing, right? Did we lose Frank?
Frank, we lost you. he'll be back, I'm sure. That's funny.
I think
we took you out to the CFL games, you know, we kind of have that same camaraderie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I only managed to make it out to two Argos games this year. I know the first I made it to the season opener with you guys, and the feeling and the sense there is just absolutely amazing. And getting together for the watch party in Frank's backyard and everything going on there.
That was a lot of fun.
It's the same feel. It really is the same feel there as it is with the National Lacrosse League, and that you know speaks to the health of the league and how awesome it really actually is. So.
Oh yeah, and as soon as the Argos finally go to a smaller venue, and that becomes a hot ticket, then you'll see the intensity skyrocket.
Now the question.
Now, I think what the Rock did with the cheaper upper bowl seats is amazing, and I expect to see a lot of people take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to, because I'm hoping to get some of those old crowds back.
Yeah, it was nice to see 15,000, 16,000 people in there. It was great in 2005 to see over 19,000 in there for the championship game.
Oh, yeah.
That was something else.
Even for the championship game a couple of years ago when they had 15 and change, you know, just the electricity in the building.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
exactly. Second to none. You know,
here's a question for you. We can stay
away from those Thursday games and things like that. It's kind of like a Tuesday CFL game. If we can stay away from those ones, we're doing just fine.
Well, as it turns out, we actually got really, really lucky this year. Everything that we have is on a Friday or a Saturday, and we've got one Sunday game.
Which works out well because I'm coming back from Philadelphia, and that extra day is going to come in real handy. But, yeah, all of the four Saturday night games are definitely in our favor.
I mean, as it is, we start the season with a Friday game, which is January 3rd against the Ruffies. And then we've got the next Friday game after that is...
The end of the month, I think, the 28th or something like that.
Yeah, the 31st. So we've got a full 4 weeks, which is, you know, a little bit long but doable. Then the next game after that is Friday, February 7th against Philly. I'm going to be missing the games on the 15th and 22nd because I'm going to be skiing, but that's, you know...
Oh, well, there's a... If I remember from a few years ago when I was in the Philippines with my wife, I still caught it online.
Now,
it was a Sunday morning as opposed to a Saturday night, which is a different feel altogether as I'm having bacon and eggs while I'm watching my lacrosse. But it's still, you know, I'm catching every minute of every game. The beauty of the YouTube lacrosse league thing, which is another thing that we haven't really talked about.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys did earlier, is it's accessible anywhere, you know, at any time, even if you want to rewatch the game anytime during the year.
Oh, well, there's a library, right? There'll be a library,
yeah.
A typical library YouTube, right?
Exactly.
Which is a lot like this show. And there's a lot of ways to take advantage of I just decided to let you guys go and see how long you guys would go. And I just came in because I was starting to get worried that you guys were doing a better job without me than you were with me.
So the one bright spot about the fact that it's a Sunday game is at least we're playing the Rush.
Yeah.
And it's not that the Rush are the weak sisters of the league, but they're definitely one of the, at least last year they were, one of the softer teams, which means it's a little easier to play against them.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
I agree.
That's the one advantage that we have with the Sunday game at 3.
And it is important, you know, I've always maintained, and it was my thing with the Argos and with any sporting team, you know, and we're raised that way. You know, when I say to you, a sport is played every Saturday, which sport is it?
I would say hockey.
Yeah.
Right?
If
I say to you, Sunday, sport that's played every Sunday.
NASCAR.
The NFL.
NASCAR. Way to go, Aaron. I'm going to come over and punch you in the face.
NFL, man. I'm watching so fast.
We'll just keep it with NFL
to keep it simple.
Yeah, you know, you get what I'm saying. And it's so important that, you know, as a fan and as a season ticket holder, it would be nice to say to my wife, honey, every Friday or Saturday, I'm not available. There's a Tuesday, there's a Wednesday, there's a Friday, there's a Saturday, there's a Sunday, there's a Monday.
Yeah.
You know, continuity in sports is very important because it has to be habitual. You know, I don't want to say that us sports fans aren't that smart, but remember, sports is where they invented the
habit.
Exactly. And don't forget, sports is the place where they invented the jock before they invented the helmet. So, you know, brightness is not one of our strengths, us sporting folk.
I'm always
reminded,
whenever somebody mentions that, I'm always reminded of what Gordie Howe said in an interview.
What did Gordie Howe say in an interview? Because I bet you've said it on the show before.
Well, I probably have. They asked him about why he wore a cup before he wore a helmet. And his answer was, well, I can always pay somebody to think for me.
Which is what his wife was for. But there's some things you need to do yourself.
Exactly.
Okay.
Anyways, gentlemen, I do have an early morning ahead of me.
Okay, we'll see you later, Gary. Congratulations.
All right,
again
it was a pleasure talking to both of you.
Anthem. And we'll see you again next week if you have time.
You betcha. Take it easy.
All right,
you
gentlemen.
Too.
Take it easy,
right.
Gary.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now, Aaron, here we are, sitting alone.
Yep.
I've got Bruce John Inch, who's on Facebook, and he's messaging me. He's getting all excited now about going to a Rock game.
All right.
Yeah, well, you know, it was bound to happen. And I do believe that half the battle is won for you to enjoy the CFL if you're an NLL fan. And the same is true the other way around, because there are so many common threads. And I think it's important to mention on the first Rock show, because it's sitting in pretty much the time slot of the CFL. And I think a lot of people who have followed us with the CFL show, I think if they give the Rock and the other teams in the NLL a chance, I think they'll be very surprised, pleasantly surprised, as to the enjoyment that they will derive from taking part. And I'm not talking about going to the games. You don't have to go to the games. You know, the games will be on TV, and as you have mentioned, and as I've mentioned, the games are also on the Internet. But it's always nice to watch a game not knowing how it ended. You know, that's the only problem with watching a game and repeat. Needless to say, if you're a fan of a team and they won, it gets a lot easier to watch it the second time around. let's talk about we talked a little bit about it. Now that the other two are gone, we can concentrate on the payroll tax issue. So from what I see here is they have a $400,000 salary cap. And on average, how many players do they have?
They're supposed to be carrying 20 players on their active roster. That doesn't include players that are on the physically unable to perform list, the injured reserve list, or players on the practice roster, at least as far as I'm aware.
So the salaries all that count are 20 active players, and do the injured players, do they count against the salary cap?
As long as they're signed by the team, I believe it does count towards the cap. I'll have to look into that. I'm still a little hazy on this whole cap deal myself. As far as I'm aware, if they've got $400,000 to spend, then that's all that they've got for all of their players. So, let me just
the average player base salary last season was $19,135, so about $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the rosters have been reduced to 20 from 23.
Yes.
And then they have the franchise designation.
That's $400,000. Divide that by the 20 players on the roster, and top salary is going to be $20,000.
Right.
Now, those players that are designated as franchise players will be getting, I believe, an additional 20%.
Okay.
So, you know, for guys like your Colin Doyle, guys like your John Grant, your I don't know who they're going to designate in Rochester, your John Tavares in Buffalo, et cetera, those guys will get a little more pay. Your lunch bucket defenders are going to be getting, obviously, a little less. But that, you know, in general, it works out relatively evenly for the most part, which is a good thing. The fact that the salaries, though, are so low does mean that the league does tend to be a little more competitive. Everybody wants to be that much better and do just that much better for the extra dollar.
There you go.
So,
and as far as punishment goes and the luxury tax, over $400,000 up until $475,000, you get a 25% payroll tax. So if you go over, they'll end up paying $100,000, and then there's 100%. So whatever you go over, you pay $75,000 if you're $75,000 over the 400. So and that money is distributed to the teams who are below the salary cap.
That makes sense.
Right. So you know, what it does, though, it creates temptation, if you will, because if you have a hard cap like the NHL does, you can't go over. You have to do something stupid, like, for example, Calgary did. Less guys.
Mm-hmm.
They had 16 guys on the bench or 15 guys on the bench for one game because they couldn't muster enough players to play, which to me is ludicrous. You know, that's just crazy. And what the payroll tax does is that it gives the richer teams, who in my opinion should be able to spend more money because their fans are dictating that. And if
mm-hmm.
the league doesn't want, you know, if the league doesn't want them to do that, then they have to put a team in that general area. But not that they're going to do it. But what I'm saying, I guess, is it's not fair that the money that's raised by a team is being used by another team to beat them. To me, it's just not fair in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically, you know, it's like me paying my neighbor's mortgage, part of his mortgage off because, you know what, he can't afford to pay it. Well, he shouldn't have bought that house. You know what I mean? I don't like that sharing stuff because that starts bringing in stuff like you don't have to have a franchise that has an actual fan base because the people who do have a fan base will pay for it. Doesn't seem right to me.
Sounds,
you know,
like
it's
as Jacksonville.
Yeah, and in the case of the National Hockey League, Phoenix, Nashville, you know, those places that have a team only because the league wants the one there, and they're funding it with money from other teams, which to me just doesn't seem right. But that's neither here nor there. We're winding down with about 7 minutes left. The next game up for, or the first game up, ironically, and I didn't get a chance to, we should have discussed it with, well, our guest was Bruce Barker, who also was an announcer for the Calgary Roughnecks, who will be the competition for the Toronto Rock in their first game in Calgary. Tell us about that matchup and how you see that early season battle coming out.
Well, looking at what we've got here, the Rock and the Roughnecks are going to be facing off January 3rd. That Calgary's always impressed me. I've always been a big fan of the team, believe it or not, mainly because they got Caleb Toth, but he's since retired. He was getting a bit long in the tooth. The players that you're actually going to want to look out for on Calgary Roughnecks, if you do head down to the game, is going to be Jeff Snyder. He's one of the best draw men in the league. You're going to be looking for Sean Evans, who's one of the best forwards in the league. He's got a wickedly deceptive underhand shot. You're going to be looking for Mike Playboy Poulin. He's one of the goalies for Calgary. He used to be a backup here in Toronto. He used to back up Bob Watson a few years back before Bobby retired. The other player you're going to want to look out for on Calgary is a guy by the name of Jeff Shatler. Played out here in Mississauga. Good kid, strong hands, great inside moves. These guys are going to come ready to play. It's going to be difficult to play them, but we'll see how that shakes out. On the other hand, everybody else here who may be listening knows I'm a fan of The Rock. They'll know about the Rock roster. The usual suspects are back. You know, Behrens is back, Belton is back, Marshall is back. Sanderson is back, Colin Doyle is back. There's a couple question marks that I have, though, about this team, having seen them in the preseason. I'm just wondering, you know, if they're going to be able to gel in time, because there were a couple incidences in the games that had me wondering how well they were going to fit together. But it's kind of a rebuilding year for the Rock. Blaine Manning is gone. He was their big number two man behind Colin Doyle. Cam Woods is retired. It's a slightly changed face on the team, but it'll still be a very entertaining game. That much I can pretty much guarantee.
All right, we have the other three games, which are on December 28th, next week, a little over a week. You've got the Philadelphia Wings at the Buffalo Bandits. Philadelphia's always been a good team.
Yeah, well, Philadelphia's been competitive, not necessarily good. I'm sure their fans will have a bone to pick with me if I call them competitive, because they've sucked the bag for the past couple of years. But the problem that you have is that for a lot of these teams, you're getting to that point where a lot of players are getting ready. A lot of the old players that everybody was used to seeing are getting ready to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they've been in the league since, in a lot of cases, since 2000. They've been playing for 10, 12, 13 years now. I mean, last year Philadelphia finished 7-9, which was better, but just barely, than the Buffalo Bandits. You know, I mean, you had three teams last year that finished tied with the same record in the West. Yeah, the Roughnecks
under a minute, Aaron. Finish up with the Bandits, and let's talk about the other two games really, really quick. Minnesota Swarm at Rochester Nighthawks. And Edmonton Rush at Colorado Mammoth. For Rock fans and for myself, I remember the last game of the year was against the Minnesota Swarm, and I guess this is going to be here to find out whether they were for real. They had an incredible goaltender. They still have him?
As far as I'm aware, they still do, yeah. This is where we find out if Minnesota's a contender or a pretender.
There you go.
And that's really about as simple as it gets.
And once again, they're playing the Rochester Nighthawks, who eventually won the championship.
Yeah. Last game, Rush versus Mammoth, looking at two opponents that actually finished. Well, the Rush finished 9-7 last year. The Mammoth finished 7-9. It's going to be a tight, close game. I expect the big guns in Colorado to come out huge. I'm hoping that Edmonton is a little more competitive this year because I'd like to see them come east for the playoffs. You know, to play the Rock, if not in the finals, then at least in the semifinals. Yeah, that's my take on that.
We got to go. Right. Aaron Freeland, thank you. Bruce Parks Barker, thank you for visiting the announcer. And, of course, Gary Grubb, who sang the national anthem at the Raptors game. To all of you, Monday and Friday, CFL 9 to 11. Wednesday, NLL, National Lacrosse League Talk. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope we'll see you or hear you again next week. Thanks for tuning in.